Okay, today we're going to be speaking about Yashan. So first, some basic information. So basics are like this. First day of Chol HaMoed Pesach, when there was a Beis HaMikdash, they used to bring carbon called the carbon omer, and it would use barley that had just grown. And the Torah tells us that the five primary grains that are wheat, rye, spelt, oats, and barley, if they take root after the carbon omer is brought, you can't eat them until the next carbon omer gets brought. So nowadays there's no carbon omer, so it becomes permitted on that the same day the carbon would have been brought, meaning the end of the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach. So any grains that took root after the cutoff date are called chadash, they're new, and they can't be eaten until Chol HaMoed Pesach, the next Chol HaMoed Pesach, at which point, once that passes, then they become yashan, which means old, and they are mutter. So for example, if someone would have planted spring wheat in May of 2022, that's right after Pesach, and it was harvested in August, that spring wheat would be usher until Pesach 2023. Once the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach of 2023 ends, then that wheat becomes old, it becomes yashan, and it's now mutter, and it's mutter forever. It's mutter, they can eat as long as they want to. And the opposite, if someone had planted winter wheat in October of 2021, that's when winter wheat is planted before the winter starts, and it would be harvested in, let's say, in June of 2022, then that wheat would be usher right away, because it already took root it had already taken root before the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach 2022, so therefore as soon as it was harvested, it would be mutter and it would be yashan. Okay, so the issur of yashan only applies to the five primary grains, and it basically becomes relevant in practice from the late summer, which is when the grain that was planted after Pesach first comes to market, and it's relevant until the next Pesach, because again, once Pesach comes, once Chol HaMoed Pesach comes, then everything becomes yashan. It doesn't apply to other grains like rice and quinoa and corn, and it's of course not an issue for the first few months after Pesach, because the produce that we have is all stuff that had taken root earlier, was harvested earlier. Okay, now, even though everything I just said to you is accurate about what Yashan is, in practice, most religious from people in the United States and elsewhere are not makbid to only eat Yashan. In fact, the hashgachas, the larger hashgachas in the United States and most of the world, will give hashgacha to something even if they know it contains chadash in it. In Eretz Yisrael, the Mahajan hashgachas will not. But in America, all the hashgachas will give hashgacha essentially even if it has yashin in it, even if it has chadash in it. And that's not something new. That's not an American thing. That always was. And poskim throughout the generations have talked about, why is it that here there's a din that's basically a beferish din, how we paskin, that it's usher, even chutzlarts, and yet everyone's makel on it. We're not really going to talk about the reasons why, but just briefly, some of the studim why people might be makel is maybe it only applies in Eretz Yisrael, the such a sheet in the Gemara, maybe it's only from Jewish farms, or maybe there's a svek sveka. It really does apply, but we have a svek sveka to be, and we can assume, therefore, that it's yashan. But again, so that's a question, and that's why many otherwise, fine religious people are not makbid to eat yashan. But even so, there are many people who are. As the years go on, more and more people have chosen to be makbid on this isser and will only eat food that's yashan. And so what we're going to talk about is what that means and how that's done. And also we'll talk a little bit about people who are sort of on the fence and they're trying to become yashan, but they're not yet ready to be 100% yashan, and what they can do to help themselves out and get towards that goal. Okay, so let's break our discussion down first by the five different grains that there are. Okay, so the good news is, of those five grains that I mentioned that can potentially be chadash, two of them, rye and spelt, are always yashan. That has to do with the way they're planted. They're always planted before Pesach and harvested after Pesach, just how their seasons work. Those are always yashan. Now, Don't make the mistake and think that rye bread is there for yashan. It's not true, because rye bread, at least in the United States, tends to be about only 20-30% rye, and the rest of it is wheat. So rye bread is not automatically yashan. But rye as an ingredient and spelt as an ingredient are not a problem. Okay, that's the good news. Okay, now let's move on to barley. Barley, or the kernels of barley, what you call pearl barley, it's the same thing, you put into a chalent or into a soup. They come, the ones that were planted after Pesach come to market in the fall, and so basically from then all the way till Pesach, person has to know that his barley is yashan. Now, barley itself is not very bulky, and it's not expensive. So some people, to make it easy themselves, they just buy 10 bags of barley, or how many bags they think they're going to use, stick it in the freezer, and they keep it until Pesach. It lasts them the whole time. You shouldn't keep it just in a regular cabinet, because it could get full of bugs. But they just stick it in the freezer. In more recent years, a number of the brands that cater to the Jewish market are able to get hashgacha that their barley is always yashan. So if that's if you have that, or if you're a restaurant that has that, you know, access to one of those brands, that's easier. Instead of trying to store it up yourself, you could just get it from one of those providers who's always yashan. If you're a supermarket carrier, if you're a distributor, and then you have yashan barley without having to store anything. Barley, that was for pearl barley, like, you know, barley kernels. Barley is also an ingredient in beer. Of course, it's the primary ingredient in beer. And so sometime in the beginning of the winter, beer will start coming from the Chodesh grains, and a person potentially has to be makar on that. In that context, I'll mention that aged whiskey is always yashan, because an aged whiskey, by its nature, means it's been held at least over one Pesach, and once the first day of Chol Moed Pesach ends, everything that's in there becomes yashan. So aged whiskeys are always going to be okay. Now, there's something else that you can make with barley, and that is you can steep it in warm water, and it turns the starch into a liquid, a sweet liquid called malt or malted barley, different ways of calling it, or malt extract. Those are all the same thing. And it's used in a few different ways. One of them is it's used like as an additive to flours, because it helps aid the protein level. It's in a lot of breakfast cereals for sweetness and flavor, and in some other foods also. It takes weeks or months to make this malted barley, so it doesn't become a yashin issue until well late into the season, like close to Pesach. There's also questions about whether maybe it's batel, maybe it's a suffix. So there are many people who are makbid on yashin. They will only eat yashin food, but they don't pay attention to malt altogether. They completely ignore the issues of malt. Other people are. That said, when someone gives hashgacha that something is yashin, then they wouldn't cut corners in that way, and they will rather, if it's going to be yashin, then even the malt would have to be yashin. Okay, our next grain is oats. Oats is like something you might use in baking, or in breakfast cereal, or like oatmeal, or even they now have something called oat milk. The Chodesh oats tend to come to market in the fall. So that means, as if you're baking, it's going to be a problem, you know, right, I don't know, Rosh Hashanah time, even, or maybe beforehand. And a little bit later, it'll start showing up in cold cereals, like breakfast cereals and oat milk and things like that. So people who are makbid on yashin are going to have to be careful about those things, you know, come those times. We'll talk about soon how they makbid, but what they do about that, but that they would have to be careful. Now, just as a little bit of an aside, is that it was generally assumed that people who are celiac, who are not able to eat the five primary grains, the only grain that they would have to care about would be oats, because there is such a thing as gluten-free oats. So people who don't eat gluten, it was assumed that all they would have to care about was the gluten-free oats. That's the only thing they'd worry about for yashin. In the past, not so long, maybe a year or so, there's been a change, because this is something new called gluten-free wheat flour, Molino flour. And so that's another thing that potentially must be, they have to make sure it's going to be yashin also. Okay, another thing that people who are gluten-free have to be careful about is that people who are celiac or gluten-free are allowed to have distilled spirits, I mean like whiskeys, that are made from grains. Not all of them, but many of them. Anyone that are distilled. And typically, grains that are distilled are also aged, like spirits that are distilled get aged also, which means they're over a Pesach, and there's nothing to worry about. But vodka and gin are not aged. They are distilled, and they are not aged. And therefore, a person who wants to eat only yashin would have to be careful, even if they're celiac and they're gluten-free, would have to be careful that their vodka and gin are made from some other grain, are not made from one of the five grains, which would be a yashin issue. Okay, now our last grain, excuse me, is the one that is the most complicated for the people who want to eat yashin, and that is wheat. Because wheat is in so many different foods that makes it that much more difficult to avoid chadash wheat. Okay, now, in the United States, we could break down wheat. There's many types of wheat, but for our purposes, we'll break them down into three types: winter wheat, spring wheat, and durum wheat. So winter wheat is what you use for crackers and matzah and other crunchy foods, and it's often used for generic food, meaning foods that can use any kind of flour. Winter wheat is always yashan, because it's planted before or at the very beginning of the winter, and it's harvested in the early summer. So it's always had taken root before the first day of Pesach, first day of Chol Moed Pesach. So it's always yashan. In contrast, spring wheat and durum wheat have very higher protein levels, and they're used for more specialized kind of foods. Durum wheat is used for making pasta, and spring wheat is for breads and rolls and bagels and pizza and other things like that, that where you want the food to be fluffier. So that's when you use a spring wheat. So spring wheat and durum wheat tend to be planted just around Pesach time. Most of it planted right after Pesach or after the first day, taking root after the first day of Chol Moed. And then they get harvested in the midsummer or the late summer. And then they come to market, you know, in the fall. That's give or take, that's when they'll be coming to market. And pasta, maybe a drop later, and that will come to market. Wheat flour is used in all kinds of foods. And we'll talk soon about how a person who wants to be careful about yashan would avoid chadash wheat, wheat flour. But it's also worth noting that there are some foods that you might not have guessed contain wheat. Two prominent examples are licorice and soy sauce that very often, if not almost always, have wheat in them as an ingredient. You could just see it right there on the ingredient panel. So a person who wants to eat yashan needs to pay attention to which foods have wheat in them. Lots of them, you know, cookies and crackers, obviously, but even other foods potentially have it in also. While we're talking about this, I'll mention that in the United States, it's a good assumption that vinegar and things that are made from vinegar, like pickles, and, you know, with vinegar and things like that, are going to be made from corn and are not going to be made from wheat, and therefore they are not yashan sensitive. That's not true in other countries, but in the United States, that's the assumption. Really, the very vast majority of vinegar in the United States is made from corn, and that's good enough to rely on and assume the food is not a yashan problem. Now, I mentioned now the five grains and the potential concerns for each one of them. The Mishnah Berurah says that people who are one only eat yashan, if they eat a food that is yashan or maybe with something innocuous like potatoes, they don't need to be machmir if they were made on kalim that had been used for chadash beforehand, which is a very significant kula and very relevant for someone who's visiting or going to someone's house where that person is not machmir on yashan, or they're buying prepared foods, things like that. And many, I'd say probably most hashgachas rely on that even if they want to certify product as yashan. They assume that the consumers, that's what they expect from them, and therefore they would be maker even on that also. Okay, now, for decades, people who've been wanting to keep the mitzvah of yashan have relied on something called the Guide to Chadash. It's made by this person, it was made by a person named Rabbi Yosef Herman, who passed away a few years ago, and since then his family has kept it up. And it has a wealth of information about hundreds of products to help people figure out what is or what is not yashan. It's the go-to guide for anybody in the United States, for sure, maybe elsewhere also, who wants to keep yashan. And it works on two tracks, okay? A simpler one and one that's a little more complicated. The simpler one is that it's basically like a clearinghouse for items that have hashgacha of yashan. So people who make products out of yashan, or Rabbanu HaMachshirim, tell the guide, this is going to be yashan this year, this is whatever, they give them all that information, and the guide just gives a list, it prints a long list of all the things, all these different foods I mentioned before, and this brand of barley is going to be yashan, and this brand of pasta is going to be yashan this year, or flour, or cookies, or cereal, or 100 other things, and people can know what they can buy that's yashan. So that's the simpler part of the guide, and that's very helpful for people, okay? But it's more famous for the other part of their work, and that other part has two parts to really how it's made. Part one is, the guide, the people who run the guide, follow the government records to figure out when the harvest is starting for the chadash, wheat, oats, and barley. So the government keeps track of all these details, and they can figure out when is it that barley, let's say, started being the chadash barley started being harvested in the summer. And then based on that, they make a cutoff date. They say, okay, if they started harvesting on this date, then it takes this long until it gets to the processors, and then all the way this time until it gets to the stores, and they create a cutoff date. They say, this is the date when the first chadash barley or oats or wheat will be coming to market, will be coming to the manufacturing facility. Okay, so the cutoff date is part one of what they decide here. They make a calculated guess as to when the cutoff date is. Part two is, they say like this, I know what the cutoff date is for wheat, oats, and barley, and manufacturers who make products for retail use will always put on inkjet onto it, some kind of a code onto the package that has all kinds of information in it. But among the different things that are in there are something that will let you figure out when this food was produced. And every inkjet, inkjet is put on as the thing is being manufactured on the packaging, it always has some way to figure out when it was made. Again, they're doing it for their purposes. But the guide gets in contact with the company and says, company, explain to me how to read your date code, your inkjetting, and then from that I can now figure out when the item was produced. Well, if we use that information together with part one, which is the cutoff dates, we can figure out was this made before the cutoff date or after the cutoff date. For example, there's something that has wheat in it, and in a certain year they decide that August 15th is the cutoff date for wheat. Okay, so that means is if the date code says that this item was produced on August 1st, then it was made with Yashan flour because it was made before the cutoff date. So that means you could buy it in the middle of November or March. It makes no difference when you buy it. You by looking at the code, you figure out it was made before the company was using Chadash flour. But if the date code showed it was made on August 30th, well, that's after the cutoff date of the 15th, and then we say it's Chadash. Okay, so we have those cutoff dates, we look at the code on the package to figure out when was it actually produced, and between those together, you can figure out by picking up this box of cereal, is it Chadash or is it Yashan? Okay, so now if you read through the guide, it turns out that I see six basic ways of date coding systems. They're actually pretty similar to each other, as you'll hear. There are six different ways, and knowing those six different ways makes it easier to deal with this part of the guide. This part of the guide, many people find very confusing. There are these six ways. Okay, I'm going to have I break it down to these six ways. The simplest is, it's just the date. It says 0218-22. That means this product was made on February 18th of the year 2022. Okay, it's pretty straightforward. Okay, if that's how the company works, then it's easy. Then you look at the code, you know when it was made, and you figure out whether that date is before the cutoff date, after the cutoff date, and you work from there. Okay, sometimes there's no date, nothing on it that indicates, that directly says when it was made. But there's an expiration date. It says, this product is good until, whatever, let's say May 14th, 2023. Okay, well, then the guide will speak to the company. The company tells them, well, we make our expiration date 6 months after we package it. Oh, well, if the expiration date was on May 14th, then that means it was packaged on November 14th. Oh, November 14th, it's typically would be after a cutoff date. Oh, November 14th, after the cutoff date, this item is Chadash, unless we find that it was made November 14th of last year. Whoa, then we know then it's Yashan. Okay, that's the expiration. Those are the two, in a way, more straightforward. Either give you a plain date or gives you an expiration date, and we know how they date their product, we can figure out when it was produced. Okay, now I have four. The other four are variations of a Julian date. A Julian date means the day of the year. Meaning counting every day, January 1st is day 1, and January 2nd is day 2, and it keeps counting all the way until 360, whatever. Okay, so the one way is, let's say something like this, 13230, okay, and that's a Julian date that tells you 13 is the year, in this case it was 2013, so 13 is for 13, and 230 is the 230th day of the year, which in that year, on my paper says it was on August 18th. So we now, this product was made on August 18th, 2013, okay, or a second version of a Julian date is, let's say, 2425. What does that mean? Well, 24, for this company, 2425 means 242, the first three digits are the Julian date, and 5 is the year. So it was made on the 242nd day of 2005, in this case, stands for 15. Okay, so 242nd day of 2015, which was on August 30th. Okay, again, we can figure out if that's before or after the cutoff date. The opposite version, Julian date, in the opposite version, the one I just told you was 2425. So 242 was the day of the year and 5 was the year. The opposite could be 3224, where 3 is the year, meaning 2013, or maybe now I should say 2023. I guess it couldn't be then, it couldn't have been made then, but 2013, and 224 is the 224th day of 2013. That was on August 12th of that year, and then you know when it was made. Okay. And the last is, sometimes a company will write, I have an example here, 230AC. Okay, so 224 is a Julian date, and AC doesn't to me and you doesn't mean anything, but in this company, that's somehow a way of, that they identify their years, however they figure that out. So again, you have to talk to the guy, you talk to the company and find out what does AC mean, and they say, okay, it's the 240th day of a certain year, and they say AC actually stands for year X. Let's say that stands for 2021. Somehow in their system, that stands for that. Then you could figure out whether the product is Yashin or not. Okay, and then there are other variations of these six basic ones, and even of these six, a lot of them are pretty similar. Like sometimes there's a prefix that means nothing. It's just a bunch of gibberish. I'll say M93230, and the M9 you should ignore because it means nothing or nothing relevant to us. Of course, it means something not relevant to us, but the 3230 is the way of figuring out the Julian day. Okay, now, as I said, lots of people who get, when they hit those kind of parts of the guide, find it very confusing, and they for the life of them can't figure out, is this Yashin or is it Chadash? I'm holding this box of Cheerios in my hand. Is it Chadash? Is it Yashin? What am I supposed to do with it? They don't know what to do with it. So, in recent years, a website opened up. It's called Yashin.com. And what it's done is, it bases, the bulk of their information is based on the guide. And they tell you that. They're not affiliated with the guide, but the bulk of their information comes from the guide. But what they do is they take the guide, which is a little more techy and more written a little more concisely, and they make it in ways more accessible for average people, especially for casual users. I mean, people who don't always eat Yashin, but they're having a friend coming over, they want to figure something out, they make it a lot more easy. They have pictures, they have barcodes, they have all kinds of ways to figure out it. And even the way it explains yes or not of something, it makes it a lot easier for people to use. And plus, it's a little more modern because it uses a website and they have an app rather than a paper booklet that the guide uses. And another resource is that the Star K prepares something called a quick reference guide. And it gives the most basic, the most relevant and timely information just on one page or two. It'll say, these brands are always of barley or yashin, these brands of cereal, buy this kind of flour, this thing is, look for this cutoff date, in a very simple, straightforward manner, without hundreds of products, just but a more targeted list of products that most people would find the most useful. Both the Guide to Chadash and Yashin.com help people with individual questions. They don't just print their information. The guide works with like phone messages. You leave them a message, and then they leave you a message back. They have this special line where they leave the messages to tell you the answer. Yashin.com is the modern version of that. They have a WhatsApp group. People can ask questions, and you send in pictures, and etc. But again, different people find different ones more useful. Okay, so that's what I've described so far is how a person, what's involved in keeping Yashin, and what a person who wants to keep Yashin, what would they do, and how would they get their information, or what should they look out for? Now, there are lots of people who are who want Yashin, believe it's the right thing, or they're in the process of getting there, but they're not yet holding by being perfectly Yashin. So, rather than do nothing, they follow Pareto's principle, otherwise known as the 80-20 rule, which says that in lots of situations, you can get 80% of the benefit just through 20% of the effort. Which means is, for Yashin that means is, by making somewhat of an effort, I'll say the 20% of the effort, 80% of your food will be Yashin. And those, the hardest choices, which is the last 20% to make the last 20% Yashin, takes a much more effort than the first, the first 80%, and they say, you know, for now I'm going to hold off on that. I'm going to do what I can. I'm able to do this 20% of effort to get 80% of the benefit, and with time I will hopefully move myself towards being 100% Yashin. So I'm going to give some help for those kind of people who come from that kind of attitude. So the first thing is like this. I'm going to repeat or review some of the basics that help us clear the way for lots of the foods. First, like this. Foods with a Mahadrin, reputable Israeli hashgacha are always Yashin. So, that's easy. Buy food with Israeli hashgacha, with that kind of hashgacha, and support Yidden while you're at it. Okay? Also, there are lots of foods that are made specifically for the Jewish community, and over the years, more and more of them have started getting hashgacha for Yashin, or label the product as Yashin. So, again, open your eyes and look for those products to pick out the Yashin version of the spaghetti or the barley or the cereal or other thing that you wanted to buy. Okay, next is, people should not, these kind of people, we should not be, we don't worry about things that are made on Chodesh Kalim. And a person who's holding this position, the 80-20 people, for sure should not worry about malted barley as an ingredient in other foods. Okay? As I mentioned earlier, rye and spelt are always yashan. Okay? Aged whiskey is always yashan. Vinegar is assumed to be, and things that are made with vinegar are assumed to be made from corn and are not a chadash palm. And also, it's only the five primary grains, but rice, corn, quinoa, potatoes, and things that are not made from the fine grain are also not a palm at all. Okay? So now, we'll focus, as we did beforehand, on the three main grains that we have to worry about, barley, oats, and wheat, and think about how to apply this 80-20 rule to those. Okay, so barley, we'll do it in the same order we did last time, barley. So, as I said, some brands are always yashan. Go, look at the guide, or look at yashan.com, or look at the Star K quick guide, and figure out which ones they are. If you could get those in your supermarket where you live, that's wonderful, it's the easiest. If not, put a few bags into the freezer, and when you think you're going to need to last you till Pesach, and you'll be covered. What happens if you go to a neighbor? You're going to be eating over a Shabbos soup at someone else's house, or you're going to eat one night and they're making you a mushroom barley soup. So find out what brand that they use. If they don't use a brand that's always Yashan, so hand them a bag of yours, or half a bag of yours, and they'll be good. What happens when you go to shul, and shul they're going to serve challah that has barley in it? So you could ask the shul to get Yashan barley. Again, if it's available in your neighborhood, why wouldn't they be willing to get that? Or you could not eat challah, or sometimes you're going to say, you know, I'm going to eat the chon, and that's part of my 20% that I'm not holding by yet, okay? Same thing for drinking beer. Come the middle of the winter, you're going to have to find brands or specific bottles that are always yashin, using these different resources. You may have to live without beer, or you may say, you know, I can't, all those don't work for me, or this today it doesn't work for me, and it's part of my 20% that I'm not holding by yet. Okay, our next screen is oats. They tend to be a problem come, like, Rosh Hashanah time. People who bake with oats tend to store them. If they can't find brands in their neighborhood, it's not so easy to find brands that are Yashin. There's such a thing recently, a little bit, but it's not very easy to find them. These people tend to put them away. They'll freeze or refrigerate some. For most people, oats come up in breakfast cereals. And it's pretty hard to store them because they're really bulky. I mean, how many boxes can you put away of it? So either they can find ones from Eretz Yisrael with a Mahajan Israeli Hashgacha, find ones with a local American Hashgacha, but that certifies it as Yashan. That's not so common. Find ones that don't have any oats or wheat in them, also not so easy, but it's possible. And if not, they may have to throw it into the 20% and say, you know, this I can't do for now, or I'm not ready to hold by this yet, or not yet this year. Okay, now, for wheat, our final and most difficult grain, so we saw already that crackers and crunchy pretzels, things like that, made with wheat are meant to make from winter wheat, and for sure someone with an 80-20 rule should not worry about that. Also, as far as buying flour, so the guide and the other resources that I mentioned before, Yashan.com and the Star K, can tell you how to buy flour that's Yashan, either from a Jewish brand or just from national brands. They'll tell you, buy this and this brand with this coat on it, or hold it from this brand, and then you'll know you have Yashan flour for baking and other purposes. What's more difficult for most people is getting freshly baked goods, like bread and pizza and other baked goods. The frozen ones, there are brands that are Yashin. It's possible to find those. That's not as hard. But the fresh ones are harder. In good news is that in many Jewish communities, there are bakeries and restaurants where all or many of the products are Yashin. Here in Chicago, many of the bakeries are always Yashin. So it's a matter of choosing the right place to shop at. Which restaurant or which bakery do I go to buy my foods, because I know those are always going to be Yashin. And a lot of the companies, like Jewish manufacturers who manufacture specifically for Jewish market, like Jewish brands, so to speak, they make breads and cake and breadcrumbs and things like that that are well distributed, are also that are available as Yashin. So a little looking in the guide and the Yashin.com and a little poking around looking at the labels can help a person find the ones that are okay. Now, pasta and noodles and kugel noodles are really quite difficult for many people to get as Yashin. For many people, it's really hard to store them. They're way too hard to keep them for the whole season, especially because if you don't keep them right, they'll get full of bugs. But there, in recent years, more and more of the Jewish brands are able are Yashin. They commit to being Yashin all year round, or many of the products are Yashin. And those are the ones to look for. If those brands are not available or some other reason, then a person may have no choice but to put that into the 20% if they can't stop from eating pasta or finding ones that are Yashin. So this has been a short overview of what it takes to keep Yashin, a little bit of focus to help people who are not yet ready all the way there, but hope to one day be in Yashin. And in Mitzvah Hashem, we should be zechut to be in Eretz Yisrael. And in ways that it's obvious and partial that the mitzvah is to keep it all the time, and we should all be able to keep this mitzvah properly.